My name is Baba Olusegun Samuel G. Williams. I'm 75 years old. Today is Monday, the 6th of December, 2021. I'm in Tallahassee, Florida. My conversation partner today is Summerhill 7, and he is a friend and a fellow actor. Summerhill.
My name is Summerhill 7. I'm 56 years old. Today's date is Monday, December 6th, 2021. I'm located in Tallahassee, Florida. My conversational partner is Baba Olusegun Samuel Williams, Samuel G. Williams. And my relationship to my conversation partner is he is a friend and a colleague in the theater and in the arts. And so with that, Baba, I really want to ask you something that I may have asked before, but I just don't remember. And that is, how in the world did you end up in Tallahassee?
How did I end up in Tallahassee?
Yeah. How long have you been here, first of all?
I've been in Tallahassee since, I'll give you the exact date, August 17th, 1987 is the day I moved to Tallahassee from Miami. What brought me here was a continuous pursuit by a professor at Florida State University to get me to come here to go to grad school. I had been teaching at the junior college in Miami, Miami-Dade Community College. I was teaching television, radio, and film production. And this professor at FSU was in the communications department, and he and a gentleman who was a cinematographer for NFL Films decided to start a minority training program in the motion picture and recording arts, because back at that time, places like Disney World and Universal Studios were cranking up, and they knew that a lot of movies and television shows were going to begin to be made in Central Florida, you know, in the Orlando area. And so it was kind of like a head start program for minority students. They wanted me to be one of the instructors in the summer program they were setting up. And at the meantime, this professor was courting me to come up here to go to grad school. Well, at that time,
independently of one another.
Say again?
Both of those things were happening independently of one another?
Actually simultaneously, you know, because I met this guy, this professor, when they recruited me to come on this training program. And that's when he started. This was in 1982. And for 5 years, this man chased me down, because we had this program every summer. I had been, I was okay working where I was working. I was working with the M Ensemble Theater Company, and, I wasn't really anxious to move. But I got into a little trouble with the IRS, and my world kind of collapsed around me, and I said, I have nothing to lose, so let me go to Tallahassee and see what this man's talking about. But that's how I got here.
How'd that go? How long did you do that for?
Say again?
How long did you do that?
I went to school at FSU. I was in the Graduate School of Communications from 87 until about 1990. I didn't complete the degree. I came here to get a PhD, but I didn't get it. While I was at FSU, I formed a band called Phoenix Uprising. We were a reggae band, and that kind of took precedence over everything, because we started making a lot of money. So I wound up playing reggae music, going on tours, part of the Bar Marley Festival tour, and some other things, you know, travel a lot, got as far away as Colorado in our road trips, played in Texas, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, all over Florida. We were part of the Bob Marley Festival Tour in 1994, played a big concert in Miami with the Marley family. But the after party was something to behold. So, you know, I've evolved since I came here. I went on to do a lot of theater work with the Essential Theater at FAMU, Florida A&M University. I sometimes say that it was more than coincidence. It might have been divine intervention for me to move to Tallahassee at the time I did. Because remember, I said I resisted it for 5 years, you know. And when I finally came, all these things started to happen. For instance, well, the band was one thing. I got involved with the Orchestra's Contemporary Dance Theater at Florida A&M under the direction of Dr. Beverly Barber. Mm. And I did a little bit of dancing, you know, not a lot, but, you know, I did what I could. But I was primarily a musician. I played drums and congas and djembe. And at one time, Florida A&M was the only college level program that was doing African dance. Mm. There are a bunch of them now, but FAMU was the pioneer in that. They were the only one in the state that had any kind of African dance program. I met a young lady named Nia Love. And if that name Love rings a bell, think about the cowboy, Nat Love. Nia Love is his great-great-granddaughter.
Wow.
Right? Her father was an art professor at FSU, taught in the art department. He was a sculptor, worked with metals. He's got some stuff on exhibit now. He's transitioned, you know. But he's got pieces around the city that you can still see. But anyway, she came here to get an MFA in dance, Master of Fine Arts in dance. And
at FAMU,
at FSU,
at FSU,
she came to FSU, right? So, but she showed up as my band Phoenix Uprising was setting up to play a gig one day on the campus at FSU, and she was looking for our guitar player. But he hadn't arrived yet, you know. I said, "Well, why you need to see him?" She said, "Well, I heard he was a drummer. And I'm about to start an African dance class at FSU, and I need a drummer." I said, "Well, lo and behold, I'm a drummer too." And, you know, so I exchanged my information with him, and the other brother, Atiba Kojo, he and I began to play for her class at FSU. And long story short, that evolved into the formation of an African dance company that was in business here from around 1993 until 2018. They closed shop 2018, but that was the beginning of
the festival.
No, the festival began in 1997.
Okay.
That was the first, but the company that organized it, the people that, you know, formed the company, the dance company, organized the festival and kicked that off in 1997. See, there used to be an African dance festival in Washington, D.C. It was called Conqueror. And a group of us, drummers and whatnot, went up to D.C. to attend Conqueror, right? That was in, let me see, 97. This had to be 95. And the following year, 96, the founders of the African Caribbean Dance Theater here in Tallahassee, Marcus and Javelle Robinson, went to Conqueror. They saw how that festival was organized, and they came here and they, you know, tweaked it. And for like 23 years or so, the Florida African. I'm wearing our Florida African Dance Festival t-shirt right now from the 14th festival that was in 2011. But that was one of the best organized and most recognized African dance festivals in the country. There were musicians and dancers who came here, people used to say straight out of Compton, straight out of Africa. You know, these people from Cote d'Ivoire and places like that, Senegal, we would do a concert at the end of that festival that showed off the talents of these guest artists that we used to bring in every year. And some of the guest artists themselves, these guys, two things they said that I really remember. One said, Tallahassee is hot. This thing is in summer. He's spending summer in Tallahassee. It's hot, right? And I said, wait a minute. Aren't you from Africa? He's like, yeah. He said, but Tallahassee is hot, right?
Yeah.
But the other thing he said was the Florida African Dance Festival was his favorite festival to come to.
Wow.
He appreciated the courtesy, the organization, the whole thing. It was first class. Yeah, we were sorry to see it go.
Yeah, I caught it 1 year. That was it. I heard about it from one of the drummers from Cote d'Ivoire, Eric Bleebley.
Oh, yes. Bleebley Doré,
We worked together at Alvin Ailey one summer. He was the drummer for Alvin Ailey. And he raved about the festival, and that was the same. Yeah. I moved to Tallahassee, so.
That was your aspiration to come to Tallahassee?
No, absolutely not. I had no inspiration to come to Tallahassee. Let me ask you another question, different from that is. You've been married twice, I think you've told me, right?
Legally married twice, yeah.
Legally married twice. So I'm interested in knowing about you're not married now, legally or illegally or super legally or any way.
No, but I have two children by a woman that I was never married to.
I could dig that.
But I have two marriages on record. Yeah.
Got it. So talk to me a little bit about your decision as a man to remain single. Did you ever make that decision or was it a default as a result?
Wow. Yeah. Some of this is kind of action adventure movie type of thing, and some of that had to do with me coming to Tallahassee as well, because it got so bad.
They are related, after all.
Yeah, I don't have anything to lose, but like they say, three times is the charm.
I've heard that, yes.
So this third person, the one I have two children with, I never married her, and I think that may be the thing that caused our separation. Was the fact that I was reluctant to take that step. But in my mind, I was like, I tried it twice and it didn't work. Let's see if we can commit to something and stick to it without going through all that other stuff. And I don't think she ever, came to understand that concept.
Okay.
But you see, I'm an only child. I grew up as an only child.
Okay.
And I live alone now.
Yes.
And I tend to be very comfortable in my man cave or whatever we want to call it, because that's there's nothing to interrupt my creative process, you know, or, you know, if I decide I don't want to do anything today, I don't have to do anything today, you know, there's nobody telling me, you know, hey, you need to do this and that, you know. So I have a certain level of independence, you know, and a motivation to be self-sufficient. And that's not conducive to a healthy relationship.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah, because, you know, because there's nothing, I mean, I have what I would call a healthy relationship with all three of the women I'm talking about right now.
Okay.
You know, but, you know, it that's because it's evolved over time since we broke up.
Mm.
You know, all three, I think all three of them know each other.
Mm-hmm.
I know the first two do. They share a same first name.
Uh-huh. You
know, I tell people that was a safeguard against me talking in my sleep. But yeah, they share the same first name, and so they adopted the nicknames Number One and Number Two. And so I can keep it straight as to who right. I was talking about. You know, it's chronological. Right. You know, Number One right. and Number Two. Yeah, that they made that up. You know.
Right. Right.
That's, you know, I just seem to another positive to not being in any kind of committed relationship with somebody is that I have so many women friends, it's not even funny. You know, I mean, like if something were to happen to me, I know a whole bunch of people, most of them women, who are gonna be the first to show up to see about me.
Uh-huh.
Right? Now, some few years ago, another musician friend and I came up with a concept, and I'm kind of tickled about being able to explain this in this format, right?
Okay, good.
We came up with something that we call your friendly neighborhood thrill support group.
Okay.
Friendly neighborhood thrill support group, right? And my motivation for that was that, you know, deep in my heart and in my mind, I believe that women don't get a fair shake, right? Women deserve more just because they're women and what they're capable of doing. And that the society is, or I guess everywhere, you know, people or places that oppress women and deny them opportunities and stuff like that. That kind of pees me off, you know? My mother's a woman. My sister's a woman. Both of my daughters are women. You know, women are in a certain African tradition called Ifa, right? The word for womb is Odu, O-D-U, right? But Odu also refers to sacred space. Right, the womb is sacred space, right? So, you know, and that was kind of what was behind my motivation for this friendly neighborhood, you know, support group. I said, I'm gonna do something to help the women that I know, most of them single moms and what like that. I said, and it's gonna be at no obligation, no cost, no obligation. You know, it's gonna help you because you're a woman and you need help, period. Right. But we were trying to do it, you know, kind of good naturedly. So we said, well, look, you know, if you need to move, you know, you're changing your residence, you need to move your furniture and stuff like that. We'll help you do that. You know, I have a trailer that I used to carry my band equipment in. I said, we got you. Right. You got somebody need to hang your curtains. We got that. You know, hook up your washer and dryer. Cool. We'll do that. I said, now, any other services are by contract. We have to fill out certain forms, you know, if you want dinner and a movie, that's extra, you know. So, you know, it was done in, it was done in jest, but it had a very serious purpose behind it. So, you know, now that I'm not in a committed relationship, I have we call that program the fantasy wife program, right? So I have a number of fantasy wives, you know, who I know if I'm in trouble, they're gonna come see about me, you know, because I go to see about them on the regular. You know, they all know each other. Everybody's friends. There's no, you know, there's no jealousy or anything like that, because that's not the nature of the relationship. You know, and I'm real comfortable with that.
I love that, Pablo. I have to say, one of the things I love about our relationship is that how, you know, we have been traveling in the same circle long before we ever met. And then right. When we met, we were immediately, you know, without any need for explanation or long discourse, understood one another. And we don't spend a lot of time together, but every moment that we spend together is completely substantive. I mean, it's a rare experience for me, because generally one of those boxes aren't checked in some relationship, but it's like, there's no codependency. There's no need for us to talk every day. And yet when we do talk, it's as if we talk every day. Right?
Yeah, how about, I never tried to analyze that, but it's, yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, you're saying. Fascinating. Yeah. Because, and it isn't a relationship that's built on mutual agreement or understand. I mean, there are lots of things. Most of the things, I'm always in kind of a learning mode and just completely fascinated by. So, like when we did the movie together, you know, I mean, that came out of nowhere. We did it and we were done. when we did the reading series together, August was the thing. Came out of nowhere. We did 10 plays together. We were done. On to the next thing. So that's why, I'm really glad we had this chance. Is there anything, I always feel like I'm the one asking you questions, but I think you know, if you have questions of me, you can ask, because otherwise I have 100 million questions for you, Baba.
Okay, I got one question for you. What brought you to the M Ensemble?
My son, man. My son is the answer to most of my what, why questions for the past 14 years, right? So I was at the North Carolina Black Theater Festival, which, of course, you're familiar with, at the request of the University of Delaware to help recruit for their next class. I didn't see a single person there that I would have recommended, but I did meet one of your ex-wives. I don't know if she's number one or number two. I think she's two.
She's number two.
Yeah, I met her. She and I sat right next to each other during the audition process. And by that time, my son's mother had left Delaware, which is where my son was conceived, and had moved back to with her parents in Miami. And so I just happened to sit next to your ex-wife, who was the artistic director for the oldest Black theater company in the state of Florida, which happened to be located in Miami. I didn't know any of this at the time we were auditioning next to each other, but I went on the break and I auditioned for the whole group of people. They didn't know I was an actor also, but I took advantage of the opportunity to audition. Then I came and sat back down next to your ex-wife, and she said, you know, we're doing Jitney. And had you ever considered coming to Miami? And I thought, well, my son lives in Miami. She said, how's your son? He's about 2 months old. He was just conceived. He's barely here. And so they flew me in to meet with John Pryor, and
Yes.
see if he wanted to cast me for the play. John said yes. I came down. I was artistic director for a theater company in New York City, so I didn't intend to stay beyond the summer. I came down, I did the play, or it wasn't the summer, I guess it was the September. I did Jitney and I went back to New York. And then I worked with the company and I was planning to come visit my sons when I was off. My son, I only have one. And then I realized very quickly that there was nothing I was doing in New York that gave me as much satisfaction as spending time with my newborn son. And so the last time I came to visit him, I auditioned for Radio Golf, the other August Wilson play at a theater company called Mosaic Theater Company. And so they offered me that role. I relocated to Miami. I didn't have a job after that was over. And I've been a Floridian ever since. When his mother decided that she wanted to get her MFA in dance in Tallahassee, that's when I decided I would come to Tallahassee. And now I'm here and they're here. And that's my Florida story. I haven't left Tallahassee now for more than 5 years. I haven't left Florida for nearly 10 years.
That's Tallahassee has a way of this they got a vine that grows in Jamaica that's thorny. They call it catch and keep, right? Tallahassee is a catch and keep,
That's
you
a
know.
key.
Because I was only supposed to be here for 3 or 4 years. I've been here for 34 years, you know. It's got a way of holding on to you. Now if
Would you
you
go
know.
somewhere else? Is there somewhere else you would go if the vine let you go?
I've had the opportunity to visit Haiti on one occasion. A lot of other places I've been there more than once, but I've been to Haiti once, and I fell in love with the place.
He told me.
I have friends there that I'm still in touch with now, and I'm agonizing over the situation that's going over there, because I know people who are in jeopardy, the hospitality of the people, the courtesy, the respect that young people have for elders is mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. I was like, I need more of this where I live. And
Yeah.
it's it's like it just takes a hold of you, man. Those people are so wonderful, and for them to suffer the way they do is tragic, when you mentioned the August Wilson plays, that's one of the things we have in common. We were both in Radio Golf, not at the same time, not the same production of it, but the same play. And I was really glad when you suggested that we read all 10 of the plays. See, I was an English minor when I was in college, and I had to read a whole bunch of Shakespeare. And I managed to get through it without reading all of Shakespeare, but I read a lot of it, bro. I was like,
Troilus and Cressida. Did
if
you
I
read
can read
Troilus and
all that, what'd you say?
Did you read Troilus and Cressida?
No, I didn't. That was one of the ones I avoided. But I said, if I can read all of that Shakespeare, certainly I can read all of that August Wilson,
Oh yes,
because
absolutely.
it's closer to home. you know, it says saying something about me, you know. So I was really happy about that opportunity for us to do that, you know.
That was,
we did it in the middle of the pandemic, man.
Right at the beginning, we caught that was a perfect storm for us.
It was almost, it was like one of the things that got us through, you know. Because that was, you know, and when we started doing it virtually, that was all right, you know, and bringing more people into the process. It was nice.
So as we close here, I know you love August. Who else do you like as far as playwrights are concerned?
Playwrights?
Who are you excited about as playwrights?
Ooh, there's a one act play I was in way back in the beginning of the Emma Ensemble, and it was called On Being Hit. It was written by Clay Goss. Clay Goss is married to what's her name? Linda Goss.
Is spell it last. How you spell that last name?
G as in George, O-S-S.
Okay.
First name Clay, C-L-A-Y. His wife, Linda, is one of the co-authors of a book of African and African American folk tales called Talk That Talk. That play had, I want to say it only had one character.
Mm.
It was about a guy who was a custodian in some kind of office building, but he used to be a boxer.
Mm.
So he's mopping the floor one night and he stops and he does this monologue about being hit. You know, yeah, it was pretty profound. And I know that Clay Goss has done some other work, but I'm not familiar with any of the rest of his work. But I was impressed with just that little. It was a one act, so it was what, 45 minutes at the most, you know. I guess there are others. This isn't really a play, but Dante's Inferno.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in college in my sophomore year humanities class, we had an assignment to write a story that was a parody of Dante's Inferno. So I pondered over this assignment, and actually I turned it in 3 days late because I couldn't get it right. But I decided to write my story with a civil rights theme,
right?
Based on what was going on in there. This is, we're talking 1965, 66, somewhere back in there. And I don't know if you're familiar with the book Black Like Me by John.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to meet John Howard Griffin right after he did what he talks about in that book. This is a white man who changed the color of, you know, modified his skin, wore contact
lenses. Yes.
Yeah. And he went around, you know, as a black man.
In
the South, yeah. He had gone to some places where he had been, like, he went to a church one time where he had been a guest speaker and they wouldn't let him in the door. Mm. You know? But anyway, he was my Virgil. He was my guide into the underworld. It was John Howard Griffin, right? And so on my nine circles of the underworld, I had, you know, started with the little minor stuff, you know, the little petty microaggressions that you get, you know. And then as the further you went down, the more serious and egregious the aggressions were, you know, all the way down to the last circle where the devil was, where Satan was. Satan had three heads, Bull Connor, George Wallace, and Lester Maddox, right? Those were the three heads of Satan, right? I turned that paper in 3 days late, and I made an A on it.
Nice.
And I found out my father's papers are in the archives at the library at Atlanta University. And I was up there looking through his stuff one day, and I run across a copy of my paper. I called it White's Hell. And I was like, oh my God. You know, I didn't know my dad was that impressed with my writing, but there's a copy of that paper in my dad's archives at Atlanta University. Yeah.
You are a remarkable, remarkable human. I'm so grateful for our friendship. I'm so glad that you were available for this conversation. Is there anything else I can add or, you know, share with you in this remaining minutes?
I'm glad we did this. This was very interesting. You know, I didn't know where you had intended, what direction you intended to go. I just said, you know, it was your idea, so I'm going to let you lead to it turned out to be a pleasure for me to be able to talk about some of this stuff, you know.
Any predictions for the next couple of decades?
Next couple of decades, I'm worried. I'm really worried. We got climate change. We got CRISPR. Those are the two things that I'm really concerned about. CRISPR could be very dangerous because it's so easy to use. Just from researching it, I found out you don't have to have, you don't have to know rocket science to be able to work CRISPR. So right. that makes it available to unscrupulous people, you know. And if we don't do something about climate change, we may not have to worry about CRISPR.
Right, right.
So, those are my two things that I think are going to be a major concern. Gene modification, if you look at your superheroes in the comics, they deal with metahumans, people who have been genetically modified. So, hey, that's possible now.
And you think that poses a threat to all of us? Well, we'll see. We'll see where it all goes, Baba. For sure. Yeah. We'll be watching closely. You and I will be in touch. In the meantime, we'll keep making art and making theater.
And that's what I'm talking about.
Coming up that we're going to work on for sure. So thank you again for this conversation.
Thank you, man. And, you know, we still got work to do together. So.
Yes, indeed we do. Indeed we do.